We are 1,537 days into 14 days to flatten the curve. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Johnny Emerson alongside Melissa from Cutting Through the Matrix. Melissa, how are you?
I'm well, Johnny. Thank you. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm watching the circus. Well, I don't know. I don't want to say I'm watching it, but I told you as you came in tonight, I said that I'm ready to scream at just how ridiculous and farcical this is. I'm so tired of this Trump trial or whatever. It's not even the fact whether or not he's guilty or innocent. I don't care. It's the fact that it's going on and we're shown this, and it's like, this is what you need to pay attention to and pick a side and all that crap. I'm sick of seeing him.
Yes, I know what you mean. It's annoying.
It is. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, don't we have anything better to do? Really? And then on top of all this, I have to look at Robert De Niro today. He's out there. He has an opinion on everything. He says that, let me see. Oh, you know what? I've got a clip up. Shall I play it? Just for the sake of it. You really want to hear Robert?
I do.
Okay. All right. Here he is.
Running this country and saying, I'm not leaving. I'm dictator for life. I hope this new ad campaign reaches outside the bubble to remind supporters of what a danger he is to our lives. This is not a threat. This is a reality. And that's why I've joined the Biden-Harris campaign, because the only way to preserve our freedoms and hold on to our humanity is to vote for Joe Biden for president. Really. We don't have a choice. On January 6th, while Republican lawmakers despicably tried to keep the loser Trump, in the White House, and Trump-inspired insurrectionists stormed the Capitol, brave men and women from law enforcement put their lives on the line to defend this country, our democracy. They are the true heroes. These guys are the true heroes. They stood and put their lives on the line for these lowlives, for Trump.
They lied under oath.
They lied under oath. Right. Who lied under oath? What are you telling me?
Those two traitors behind you.
Excuse me?
Those two traitors behind you.
They lied under oath?
That's right.
What are you saying?
They're traitors.
They're traitors. I don't even know how to deal with you, my friend. I don't even know how to deal with you.
Right, that's enough of that. That guy that's standing right, I can't quite point to him, but the guy that's standing right there with the tattoo on his chest there, that guy, do you know who that is?
I don't.
Okay. No. That is one of the Capitol police officers from January 6th that was on MSNBC selling a book a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
So anyway. Well,
I'm surprised that De Niro didn't handle this heckler in the crowd, the questioner, by saying, are you talking to me? Are you talking to me?
I'll smack you in the mouth, you mutt. this guy,
I mean,
he's standing up there calling, you know, Trump and company, which, okay, fine. You know, he's entitled to his opinion, but he's calling him a gangster. And it's like, hang on a minute, Robert, you spent your career playing a gangster in gangster movies.
I guess he thinks he can recognize one when he sees one, but... Honestly, I mean, the solution, then he says, you don't have a choice. If you want freedom, then if you want to hold on to your humanity, in other words, you can't be human. You can't hold on to humanity if you don't vote for Biden. I'm sorry, but I'm not buying that. This is we do have a choice, and I'm going with don't vote. That's it.
Well, that is a choice, I have to say. Did you hear that? Speaking of voting, did you hear that the UK has a general election coming up on July the 4th? Have you heard that?
Yes, yeah.
And I told, of course, it has to be the American Independence Day. And I told Marty and company, I said, well, you make sure that you sign your name as large as John Hancock did on Independence Day, will you? So anyway,
I'm an abstainer. I'm a conscientious objector to voting.
Well, it doesn't matter anymore, does it? Or did it ever?
No.
You know, it
I don't think it ever did, but it certainly doesn't matter now.
Not now, no. It's just it's farcical now. I remember that you know, we're watching some of these elections that are taking place. I do that with the air quotes. We're watching these things that take place, and it's like we see the results that somehow or another get leaked a week before or something before the election. Then it just comes mm-hmm. out that it's almost exactly that way. So it's like there's no point. And I don't even know. I don't know what they're going to do this time. I think they're going to have to do something. I don't know what it's going to be, but they're going to have to do something to bring these drop boxes back, because I think that was a boon for them the last time. So they need the drop boxes. They've got to have the voting machines themselves.
Yes. Yeah.
So all of that has to be in play, and they have to have a reasonable excuse for it, for people to be able to buy it. So all of that stuff has to be in play. They can't just, you know, and we've got to have early voting and mm-hmm. Motor voter and every other thing you can think of. It's not absentee balloting. I've explained what absentee balloting is here several times. That's something entirely different. Mail-in mm-hmm. voting has to be a thing, and we have to have voting. Are we in voting season now? We're past early vote. Like, we're past like voting week and voting month, and now it's voting season. I think where we're just voting all season. Back in the day, it wasn't that long ago, I remember it was voting day, as in you vote on that day. And if you can't make it to vote on that day, guess what? You ain't voting. It's that simple. Or you're absentee balloting, which, again, is something entirely different. That's something that's actually controlled. But you're voting on that day. And you know what? We used to know who the winner was that day by that night.
Yes. Yes.
Now we don't know for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Hell, it might be a month, you know. So
this is the amazing thing about the level of corruption that we're under right now, is that for decades, hundreds of years, as long as there's been a vote in the U.S., people could somehow manage to count little pieces of paper with a fair degree of accuracy. And now that it's all electronic, it's just, they just wring their hands and go, oh, I don't know, we have to recount. It's just total corruption masquerading as a real system. I think.
I remember, you know, it actually dawns on me when you say that. Do you remember George Carlin? You know, the comedian. Of course you do.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. As a matter of fact, Johnny, I just played that clip, Why I Don't Vote.
Did you really?
Something. Yes, yeah. I did. Yeah, okay. I love it.
That's what I was. Yeah, I was going to reference that when he was going through all the things that we're told that actually matters. And he says, your vote counts.
I haven't been a big Carlin fan in my life because he's just so crude and crass.
He is.
But he's funny. It's like, if you can get beyond that. And that one. The one thing that I didn't like about that bit is that it's really an example. You know, Alan would say, break the cow's legs and then kick it because it doesn't get up. What he's saying isn't exactly true at the beginning. Before he gets into the meat of the joke of the bit, he says that American people are fat, stupid, lazy, ignorant, you know, just this pool of garbage in, garbage out. And from this pool of people, your candidate is pulled and brought up, and you're voting for that. And so if you're a fat, stupid, lazy, ignorant people, then what are you going to have to choose as a candidate but one of your own? And that's where I simply disagree 100%. So I edited out that part and only used the little bit where he gets into why he doesn't vote, because that was germane to the topic. But the candidates are not coming from the people, except at the lowest, lowest levels of politics.
Yeah, they might be like a county commissioner or something.
Yeah,
that's about it.
And even then, the old boy network is so strong. So I, what you're looking at are candidates that have been chosen years before we ever see them or hear their name. They're brought up, they're vetted, they're groomed, they are trained. And then we get them and we're told, here's your choice, A, B, or possibly C. You just mentioned a libertarian candidate that just got on the ticket. So it's A or B or possibly C, and that's it. And we have nothing to do with it. So the incredible corruption and the awful people and the lack of choices we get, they do not come from the people. And I just wish people could see that. They're not like us. They're not one of us. They don't feel our pain. They don't. They're not blue collar billionaires.
there was the mayor of my town once back in the U.S. He was actually offered to run for he was a Democrat and he was offered to run for the national party approached him and said, do you want to run for the congressional seat in Ohio? And he said for the national seat, not the state rep seat, but the mm-hmm. In D.C. And he said yes. And people in town were telling, I mean, he was a decent mayor, even for being a Democrat, he was a decent mayor, mm-hmm. Old school kind of Democrat, not this new age, whatever this is. But people in town were telling him, and people on the council were even saying, don't do that. There's no reason. And people in town, on the local, the Boss Hog type things you're talking about, those networks, the good old boy networks, because that's what it was. You talk mm-hmm. about it, a good old boy network. I come from a town of 6,000 people. Believe me, it's a good old boy network. mm-hmm. That's what it is that runs that place. So people were telling him, don't do that, because if you go there, it's just going to change everything that you stand for and we won't support you anymore. And you know what he did? He ignored them. And he went anyway,
uh-huh.
but he lost. And guess what happened? He lost everybody's support back at home, too. So now he's finished.
Yeah. No, that's what they and, the Freemasons say, word to the wise. That's if you're coming out of a good old boy network and you ignore the advice, maybe it was the people, maybe not. But it sounds like he was getting a little whisper in his ear from the good old boy network and he ignored it. You ignore at your own peril.
Mm-hmm. Certainly do. Well, who is this libertarian candidate? Trump was actually campaigning at the libertarian. I don't know if it was their convention or not, but he went to speak to their constituents. Mm-hmm. And as he was giving the speech, they were booing him on the stage. And he was saying, look, you need to pick me as your nominee because, this is what I've got planned and this is what we're looking to do. And they just booed him the whole time. They just booed him. And they booed him off the stage. But they ended up getting this guy as their nominee. His name is Charles Oliver or Chase Oliver, who was a supporter of Barack Obama and John Kerry. And he's also a guy that is for, and apparently the party's platform is this way now. I don't know, but their party is for open borders, for expanding our business deals with China for some reason, and their support of this LGBTQ2+IA, whatever this agenda is now. And it's like, hang on a minute. When did the Libertarian Party become this? I don't remember the Libertarian Party being this. I remember the days of Ron Paul, not Rand, the senator, but his father. I remember mm-hmm. that time, been in Congress he was in Congress for a long time. But I remember him talking about things back in the day, such as, look, we need to audit and end the Federal Reserve, which I'm still a proponent of. I mean, that organization, goodness. Well, I mean, we could probably do, I think, 10 podcasts on that, not cover all of it. I'm for shutting that group down. Are going after them, at least just to audit. Let's open the books and find out what those people are doing and what they have done. Mm-hmm. Let's find out how much they're actually stealing from the American people and let's do something about it. That's where I would start with that, which I agreed with that party's platform on that standpoint. Our overseas involvement to the level that it has been without any, if we're going to be involved in overseas operations and overseas presence, let's have more than just us. If we're going to do that, that's never been the case. It's always been us floating the bill, mm-hmm. Paying for Israel's national defense for the last 35 years or however long it's been. That's another thing. And other countries, I might add, not just Israel. I'm just picking that out because we give the most to them. We've paid for their entire Air Force and they don't use it. I don't think it just sits there. Closing our borders down, putting all of our money towards national defense at home, not overseas. So when did this disconnect happen is what I'm trying to figure out. I don't know. It's always been a at least the libertarian side of things, it's always been more of a, I don't want to say isolationist. I think that's kind of a harsh word, but it's been more about domestic policies and looking after our own first kind of thing. Not like the whole Trump America first thing, but, or maybe it was for its time, but now it seems to be the exact opposite of all that.
I haven't followed the Libertarian Party. I don't really follow politics at all, but I haven't followed the party, but my understanding of libertarianism is that essentially what you're looking at is an economic program that somehow got a political life. And the economic program is fairly constrained. It's the least amount of controls over capitalist or business endeavors. I've heard people describe themselves, you know, like the common voter, as when they're trying to say where their head's at, that they might describe themselves as being fiscally libertarian and socially liberal or socially conservative. But most people, at least, you know, older citizens who describe themselves as libertarian, will make a distinction between social policies, either left or right, and economics. But, you know, so the economics that they're talking about in libertarianism is hands off government, the least amount of government involvement in business. But I, like I say, I have a limited understanding of that.
Well, so. they take the standpoint you're talking about. This guy actually takes it a step further. I have a tweet from him from December 18th, 2021. He says, economic freedom demands the unrestricted movement of human as well as financial capital across national borders.
Well, all he's talking about is the World Trade Organization, NAFTA, USMCA, as they call it now. All he's talking about is international goals for trading blocks. That's it. That's not libertarianism, by my understanding. That's
that's globalism.
That's globalism. Exactly.
That's Klaus Schwab. That's the World Economic Forum. Oh, exactly. I forgot to tell you. Have you heard the sad news? Have you heard Klaus has stepped down as chairman of the World Economic Forum? Did you know?
I did not know that.
Well, now you know. Now you know.
Is it his daughter who stepped
up?
Or?
Well, he sent out a private email to his staff last Tuesday, mm-hmm. so a week ago today. Mm-hmm. And it's not really been too public, and it's been very quiet. But he announced that he is stepping back as chairman and executive, whatever, you know, executive chairman or whatever he calls it.
Is that effective immediately?
Effective immediately, and no successor has been named.
Yeah. See, I've read some articles from time to time over about the last 2 years saying that this would happen. And there was speculation even amongst people who attended Davos and, you know, it, like insiders who were speculating that one of his children, he has a son and a daughter, and they are both involved in WEF business. And so they were speculating that the successor would likely be one of his children. But it's interesting.
Well, his son, Oliver, is the head of the World Economic Forum branch in Beijing, China. So there is that. And of course, Klaus spends a good deal of time over there giving speeches at conferences and things like that. He's an honored guest every time he shows up there. His daughter, I've not really heard much out of his son. I've never seen him speak or anything like that, but I have seen
his daughter. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen his daughter, Nicole, I think her name is. I've seen her talk before. And she just kind of... She reminds me of just like a new age, for lack of a better term, a new age hippie that you would find on like a college campus somewhere. That's kind of what she reminds me of. And she's the head of their environmentalism projects or whatever, like that division of the WEF. She's all about like the green stuff and the sustainability and all that stuff. So I've heard her speak on that, but nothing else.
Johnny, I think it's going to come down to which of his children look best in that weird broad-shouldered tunic that he wears, because he'll have to pass that down to him.
So. I always thought he was role-playing a Romulan, you know, when he did that.
You know what? It's almost there was a listener supplied video in one of the series H.G. Wells' Things to Come. And that movie from 1936, that tunic is directly out of the movie Things to Come. It's pretty hilarious. So
this guy is like he's a caricature for a Bond villain. He is.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But yeah, he's out. He's gone, which tells me one of two things. There's going to be something else. And I'm speculating that it's possibly going to be, and I know you're going to love this, it's possibly going to be Tony Blair, that could step up and take over. Because he's been kind of, yeah, it is, because he's been kind of doing a lot of his own foundation has been doing a lot of work, and he's into Africa at the moment doing deals down there like Gates would do. But he's been more of a center stage person in recent months in and over the last couple of years. So it's possible. I mean, front man, of course, absolutely. No question about that. But it's a possibility. I don't, I'm not saying for sure. It's just speculation.
Well, I don't know if that's, I think I might've actually heard that one floated about by somebody, you know, so that's not outside the realm of possibility. The other thing too, I got to give you, if it is your original thought, then I'm going to let you have that, because I have to give you marks for calling it in Ukraine. I did mention this in something that I put up recently, but you had speculated what was really behind the situation was the green and sustainable. And this is now being, I've seen two things on it recently that at this time where the Ukrainians refugees are flooding Europe, there's more than 20,000 in the schools. I thought it was 20,000 refugees in Germany, but no.
No.
They are beginning to teach Ukraine. Yes, they're beginning to teach Ukrainian in German schools because there are more than 20,000 students that are Ukrainian. That doesn't speak about their mothers, their fathers, their siblings who are out of school. So it's a crazy situation. But you called it on that one. But back to Tony Blair, that could be, I don't, you know, I'm not sure if I remember hearing it, but it's possible. My thinking is that maybe it's time for the WEF to recede just a little bit, because for years, Club of Rome was the one that was kind of calling the shots on the agenda. They sank back to the fore, although they're still there. And then it was Davos, Davos, Davos to a fever pitch. Maybe their public front has served its purpose, and we're going to hear from a new insidious group of people that have their fingers in every pie. I don't know.
I don't know.
Changing of the guard is always interesting.
It is. And I mean, what better face could you have than this?
He looks like a creature from what says it? The, you know, the movie I'm thinking of.
Like Lord of the Rings.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, Gollum or whatever. Yeah. That's what he looks like. When I first showed this picture to Marty, he said he looks like somebody that would approach you in a pub and bum money off of you to go buy drugs.
Yeah, my precious.
I do see a change coming. I don't. It's up in the air at the moment. And you know what? Maybe that's it. Is this just my other speculation? Of course, if there's not going to be a successor named, then they've gotten what they need, and they're going to. I don't know if dissolve is the right word. They'll morph it into something else. Because do you remember the last? It was this conference and the one before that. So you've been with us for the last 2 years that they've done this. So and we've talked about the last two conferences that they've had, and the last two, because we were just coming out of COVID for the one before this last one. And it just looked like a clown show, the last two, if you remember. Mm-hmm. They had these ridiculous, weird stage performances of like these, you know, like these music things and the these music performances. And they didn't have, in the last two conferences, because of how unpopular the COVID measures were in the countries, the leaders of those countries, largely, not necessarily all of the representatives, but the heads of state, have not attended the last two conferences. So when
that's interesting.
When Boris Johnson was prime minister, he was not there. And what's her name? Liz Truss did not go. I think she was only in there for a short period of time anyway. But it was during that conference. She was not there. All of the cabinet members, none of the cabinet went to the last two conferences. And we haven't had any U.S. reps. We've had some members of Congress, some senators, like Manchin was one of them. He's always been a guy down there. You've had, what's her name? Carista Freeland, the deputy PM in Canada, Trudeau's number two. She was there, but Trudeau himself has not been there the last 2 years. And I don't think Macron has been there. I don't think that any of the other European leaders were actually there the last 2 years. So a change has definitely been in the works for quite some time.
That's interesting. That's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, they've had the, you know, the BlackRock representatives like Larry Fink and the rest of those guys and all the CEOs and business people and things. They've been there. But the world leaders and leaders and their staff largely have not been there the last 2 years. So something
that's
has changed.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Something has changed.
You know, there are other things, too. There's always so much to keep track of that it's impossible. And I don't remember the name of the conference that I'm about to tell you about, but there was something that happened in the Middle East, and I was not aware of this. I can't think of the French billionaire. He wrote a book. Alan used to refer to it. He was an advisor to probably Sarkozy and Mitterrand, Frenchman by the name of Attali. Jacques Attali was at this event. Right. This coincided with Silverstein. Who is the guy that just got sent to prison for his cryptocurrency scam? Bankman-Fried.
Bankman-Fried. Yeah. I thought you were talking about the Silk Road guy. My mistake.
Yeah. Bankman-Fried and Jared Kushner were all there hanging out with various. It's possible that this happened in that it was hosted by Saudi Arabia, but this was the first time that I.
There was just, I'm sorry to interrupt. There was just a conference that was sponsored by the WEF that just took place in the Middle East not long ago. Larry Fink was there, and we played a clip of him a few weeks ago. Is that the one you're speaking of?
Well, this was one that was from last year, and I said Silverstein, but I might have meant Fink. Okay. I might have meant Fink. But what happened was that they were all gathered in the Middle East. This was literally moments, almost weeks before Bankman-Fried was arrested. And what I surmised, I don't know, but it talked about a private dinner that Kushner had been to and Bankman-Fried was there. And what I just guessed, total speculation, was that Bankman-Fried knew that his little Ponzi scheme was about to be exposed. He was over there. It was publicly admitted that he was there trying to raise money for his business. My speculation is that he was unsuccessful in doing that and that there was something much bigger than him and his contributions to various Democratic politicians and the whole Ponzi scheme. There was something bigger that we don't know about. And everybody decided he's going to be the fall guy.
Yeah, I'm still of the opinion that. What's her name? Because she's, you know, she's been persona non grata in this whole thing is Caroline Ellison. That would be his whatever she was, you know, the one that said looked like an anime character, that one.
Yeah.
She just kind of like she showed up, she testified and then she disappeared and nobody's heard from her since.
Yes.
Now, who were her parents? We did a little digging. Who were her parents? Her parents were on the financial, head of the economics department at Harvard.
Yes.
Now, who had an office at Harvard in the economics department? Any guesses?
It's recently?
No.
Epstein.
You got it. Jeffrey Epstein. Yeah. And Bankman-Fried goes down. Uh-huh. Sure. Yeah. Something bigger. I'm just saying there's a dot here, there's a dot there, and a dot over here, and I'm drawing a line. Okay. That's all I'm saying. And now the person that connected that dot to Bankman-Fried has now disappeared. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And Ghislaine Maxwell is in Club Fed. Okay. She's just hanging out, right? Drinking Kool-Aid.
Yeah. I hope they're giving her champagne, poor woman.
Oh, she's drinking champagne with strawberries. You know she is. Of course she is. So you're never going to get any names out of that. It's never going to happen.
No.
Well, part of the environmentalism out of the World Economic Forum includes electric cars, right? We love electric cars here, don't we? We've talked about
how much we
absolutely love these things, especially the ones that are made by the Chinese. They're great cars. Yeah, they explode on demand whenever you want them to. Yeah. Well, there's a new study out today that says the amount of copper needed for EVs is impossible for mining companies to produce. So therefore, the manufacturers aren't going to be able to make the actual cars. So if we don't have enough copper for just the EVs, that kind of puts a stall in the copper market for just about everything else, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't have enough copper for EVs, well, that's pretty much the end of all of our electronics, isn't it?
Well, it's something big in the works. I mean, you've got this coincides with, I just read that recently in the last day or two that Joe Biden had said that he doesn't want to import no more Chinese EVs, no more Chinese EVs. It's got to be manufactured in the U.S. And this is to help the economy and protect the American worker. But there's something else going on there because I know that Biden doesn't really care about the economy or the American worker. So what else is at play? You want to hazard a guess?
Well, I'm going to go with the fact that we actually don't have Chinese cars for sale in America, do we? I've never seen
it. No.
Yeah, so we're not. Sorry. So we can throw that one to the wind right there because that one's not going to work. So I think that's just window dressing. So but we do get the batteries from China. And so he didn't say anything about the batteries, did he? No, of course not.
No, he did not.
And he did not say anything about the fact that China has a 98% monopoly on rare earth mineral mining as part of their Belt and Road Initiative. And that includes lithium. So he can sanction Chinese cars all he wants to save the American worker. He doesn't give a damn about the American worker, but he can say that all he likes for his campaign window dressing or whatever. Uh-huh. And yeah, that's not going to matter because we're not sanctioning the actual guts of the car that have to come out of China. And that includes Elon Musk with his Teslas, by the way.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you see he was in New Hampshire the other day, 30 minutes before he arrived? Did you see the crowd that was there?
No, I didn't.
It was less than 50 people.
That's not a crowd. That's a cocktail party.
It was a cocktail party. The biggest group of people were actually the media behind the gate. You know, that was the biggest crowd. They had four tables. I don't even think they filled all of them up. But anyway, well, the last time you were on, we talked about this LGBTQ agenda in schools, right? And mm-hmm. we discussed all that going on. Well, you'd be happy to know that the police in St. Petersburg, Florida, they are on the case. There was a horrendous felony that took place in Florida, and they are on it. And you better believe they are on it for the protection of the community. They're there working for you. Take a listen.
Police are searching for the driver caught doing donuts, damaging the Progressive Pride street mural.
Just after 2:40 Wednesday morning, a vehicle is caught on a security camera doing donuts, damaging a Pride mural on Central Avenue in St. Petersburg. Tire marks still visible on the street.
My reaction is disappointment, not surprise. I think anytime we're in a situation where we have public displays of pride, our authentic selves, people are going to have a reaction to it.
Dr. Byron Green Collish is president of St. Pete Pride. He feels someone targeted the mural. He says the mural is visual representation that everyone is welcomed here.
The mural is really a public love letter to the residents of St. Pete. Being able to collaborate with the city and other pride organizations here in the city really feels like love and home.
St. Pete police say over the past week, two different vehicles have left tire marks on the mural. One where a driver accelerated on Friday, May 17th at around 9:30 in the morning. The second incident, that vehicle doing donuts. Officers do not believe the two cases are connected. Mayor Ken Welch posted on Instagram saying, in light of the recent vandalism targeting the Progressive Pride flag mural, there is no place for hate in St. Petersburg. St. Pete police say the person responsible faces a criminal mischief felony charge since it will cost the city $1,100 to restore the mural in time for Pride Month festivities.
A massive thank you to the city and being able to jump into action as quickly as they did.
Anyone with any information regarding the driver in the blue vehicle is asked to contact St. Pete Police.
If you know the driver of that vehicle that has caused that felonious incident, then you need to call them immediately and report that as a hate crime.
Well, I tell you what, Johnny, I think whoever is in that blue vehicle, if it wasn't a well-camouflaged license plate, they better be doing a little bit of homework on where they can buy cheap, cheap, cheap paint so that they can take this down to misdemeanor.
Yeah, community service.
They need to be able to say, I'm sorry, but I've been able to source this paint and it can be done for $432 misdemeanor. No.
This is the level. Yeah. My point is that this is the level of absurdity that we've reached with this. This is ridiculous. So first of all, where is the somebody's just doing, you know, whatever. They're just goofing off or whatever. But where is the call to actually have that type of display? Not because of what it represents. I need to be very clear on this. But having colors that are interfering with the the harmony of the road. Let me put this into perspective. If you drive a car down the road with red lights on the front of your car, what do you think is going to happen to you? You're going to get pulled over and you're going to get stopped because you're displaying lights that are not allowed to be on the front of your car, correct? They're supposed to be on the back. Those are brake lights. If you have yellow lights that are running lights that are only, if you replace the color, for example, of your headlights, well, that's going to be a distraction to other drivers and you can't have that. Why is this not treated the same way?
Yes.
You would be stopped and you would be fined and you'd be given court summonses and everything else until you had that fixed.
Yeah.
This is not treated the same way. This is a distraction, in my humble opinion, to everyone else on the road. So why is that not addressed?
No, you're right. And, you know, this person, you know, the head of Pride or whatever, he's calling it a love letter to the city. And what it really is it's at the very least a distraction. I personally am a fan of blue. I love blue in all shades, aqua and turquoise and marine blue and navy. Just because it means so much to me and I find blue to be a color of peace and harmony and love, am I allowed to go out and paint the street blue?
No, absolutely not. You'd be charged with criminal damaging and everything else because you're defacing, technically you're defacing government property, but you pay for it anyway because it comes out of taxpayer money.
Would it help me if I organized a group of people and we said that blue is the color of peace and unity and serenity and that saying otherwise is hate? And I got some people to join my cause and we registered as a... You're nodding your head. No. So this is not something that I should do.
Yeah, the reason is you have your right to do that, and I'm sure a court would rule the same. However, it's not part of the political agenda.
Correct. Yeah. I won't get very far. It won't be sanctioned. It won't be allowed. It's going to take me a decade to, you know, spread this across, to spread my brand of love with my color blue. We're an upside down world. I'm afraid, Johnny, that we're an upside down world for the duration. Wrong is right. Up is down. Black is white. And it's getting harder and harder to hang on to your sanity.
It is. And I was talking to somebody yesterday and they said, you know what? They're of the same opinion. And they're like, there's no point to whatever, like everything they're doing as in like the day to day stuff, the job that they're in and everything that they do within that and all of the, you know, the interworkings of everything that they do in an everyday life. They're like, there's no point to any of it no longer because it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter if you do this or if you change up and you go and do something else, you're not part of this. And this goes along with DEI, doesn't it? The diversity, equity, and inclusion. You're not going to make it anywhere with all of that in play. It's just not going to happen. You're not going to have a successful career path any longer with that in place. It's just not going to happen. So if there's no point into what you're doing now, then there's no point into switching and being against that, you know, going with the DEI stuff and, you know, all the inclusivity stuff, because you're not part of that agenda either. I guess what I'm trying to say is they don't see a hopeful future in anything. And they're a long way from any kind of like retirement or anything like that. You know, they're mid-30s and they're like, this is ridiculous. They see everything as being counterproductive because we're in topsy-turvy world, as you say.
You know, I put up an audio and I'll just say that the Redux that went up on Sunday, I am aware that the audio quality was terrible. I actually ran it through a processor, cleaned it up, and it's so much. It's one of those talks that's only available for sale. It's not a free download. I cleaned it up considerably, but I still recommend that people listen to it with a headset on because it's they can get it out. But I put it up because what Alan said was so important, even though this conversation was recorded in 1998. It was not supposed to be for broadcast, just a phone conversation. So it's 26 years old now. But in it, Alan is talking about virtual reality, the brain chip agenda, where we're going, et cetera. And he's trying to explain to the person that he's talking to that things are not as bleak as they think it would be. The woman that he was talking to kept saying, well, how many do we need? What do we do to turn this around? How do we fight this? And she kept going back to how do we overhaul the money system and so forth. And Alan said, you keep taking this back to the material And if you can just get out of this, he said, it's one person changing within themselves. And if they can share the information once they have achieved that for themselves with one other person, he said, at the very, very top, we have a minority. And so you don't really need a numbers game to turn it around. What he was talking about is breaking through the illusion. So when your friend is describing to you that they feel that it's pointless, I think maybe a lot of people who start to wake up to the system and how it's played and how we're conned, they'll reach that level of saying, oh, it's all pointless. It doesn't matter. There's nothing, you know, if I go this way, they've got it covered. If I go that way, they've got it covered. It's thinking yourself outside the box. And it really needs to start by breaking through the illusion. Nothing that they give us in this system is real in the real sense. It's all part of an illusion that has been laid on for us. So you can look at all of politics as being part of that system of illusion. And there are a variety of ways. First of all, most people get married, they have a family, and so they're kept quite preoccupied keeping the roof over their head and putting their children through school and all of that. But even if you don't fit into that category, well, you're chasing a carrot and you're kept chasing a carrot your whole life. And if you're not chasing the carrot, you're so tired from chasing the carrot that you're watching sports and pornography and movies or whatever. You're checked out. And all it takes is one person who can think themselves out of the illusion. And when they're all the way out, they can help somebody else think themselves out of it. Because it's bleak and not bleak. There is a way out, but it's an individual journey. It's the individual's path.
No, I completely agree. And that is the biggest challenge for people like us. And this is what I try to portray to this person and others. I'm like, look, you know, it might seem pointless, but for you to actually learn about what's happening and take it upon yourself to figure out what's going on, that's actually going to give you a sense of fulfillment and a sense of purpose for yourself.
That's right.
Yeah. And people, they just, that requires effort. And I know that's asking a lot of people these days, but there are people that genuinely do want to understand what's going on, and they do want to take the time, and they do make the time for themselves to figure it out. You know, they don't watch the television or do any of the football or the movies. They don't drink, you know, go out and party and all that stuff. And they genuinely take the time because they truly are curious and want to know. Mm-hmm. And that's, I agree with you. That's what it's going to take is that right there. If you can have that sense of self-fulfillment, then you will have a purpose for yourself. That's not saying go out and become a narcissist. That's not what I'm saying at all. Because
no, it's the total opposite.
It's the opposite of it. Yes. Yeah. So that a lot of people would look at it like that. Oh, well, you think that you know all of this stuff that someone else doesn't know. So that makes you feel superior. Well, in a sense, when it comes to pop culture and people like Robert De Niro, yes. Yes, it does. But no, it's really a sense of self-purpose. No, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. I mean, the other way of looking at it is that to keep yourself on a path of being dedicated to learn and study and uncover and then sharing that simultaneously with other people is quite the opposite of narcissism because, well, from a purely psychopathic wizard point of view, you could just use the magic of your higher knowledge to make your life a little bit more comfortable, could you not?
Absolutely. And that's actually what I do is I actually give myself the confidence in knowing that I can decode what's going on a daily basis. I don't, how do I put this? Once you know the truth about something, once you have the combination to the safe, guess what? There is no more safe. You cannot be right. Brainwashed. Once you know what's going on, that's it. There's no more convincing people like that. So I have the confidence and the wherewithal to know that when I see, I don't know, something on the mainstream media, I can pick that apart in 30 seconds and turn it off. So I don't have to sit there and listen to that any longer, like the person that takes it as the gospel that's standing next to me. Yeah. So, yeah, it is that. Yeah.
And the journey is just to keep pushing. I mean, what I find is that I'm always learning something new. And hopefully, primarily, it's about myself. It's about my own foibles and shortcomings and blind spots, so to speak. And you just keep going, you just keep going and go, oh, all right. So I didn't see it that way before, but now I do. And it's kind of checking in, and, it's hard to be, it's hard to become narcissistic or arrogant about the process of discovering reality when you can just look in the mirror and see your own shortcomings so easily, if you're going to be honest.
Yeah, well, I wasn't necessarily talking about that from a self-reflecting standpoint. I was talking about that.
Oh, no, I know you. Else. I know you weren't. Yeah, I know you weren't.
Someone else looking at you, because if you try to have a conversation, like a real conversation with somebody, like we're sitting here having, if you try to talk to someone about like real things that are going on, then they don't have any clue, then they'll say, oh, well, you sound like some sociopathic narcissist is what you sound like.
Yeah.
And it's
or
like,
just
no,
crazy.
Yeah. It's like, no, I'm actually trying to tell you what's going on so you can do all this for yourself. You don't have to listen to me.
Yeah. That's, that's why you really only share what you have to for a limited base of people who hopefully have already started the process of learning and showing themselves, because otherwise it's kind of lost on them. They don't even get where you're coming from. And they certainly don't get that you're coming from a place of trying to help them, because they've decided actually that they like the illusion. That's the key thing. They like the illusion. And that is actually the narcissist or the psychopath, somebody who prefers to live in illusion. They don't want to stop and think about how their decision to live a lie and live under a lie harms other people, hurts people.
Just because you put it in that context, I have to play this.
Okay.
Because you run the Matrix website, I have to play this clip from the movie.
Oh, all right.
Because it is exactly this. This is how people actually portray it.
The Matrix is a system, Neo. That system is our enemy. But when you're inside, you look around, what do you see? Businessmen, teachers, lawyers, carpenters. The very minds of the people we are trying to save. But until we do, these people are still a part of that system, and that makes them our enemy. You have to understand, most of these people are not ready to be unplugged. And many of them are so inert, so hopelessly dependent on the system, that they will fight to protect it. Were you listening to me, Neo? Or were you looking at the woman in the red dress?
I was...
Look again. Freeze it.
Yeah, I love that scene. And that really is what it is. You are going to be turned on by the vast majority of people. And the trick is being able to walk through, understanding that you're surrounded by people who are potential enemies. They really are. And you don't actually need to share something with someone unless they present themselves as, asking the right question. What is this about? What's going on? Because otherwise they just shut down. They've made a decision, and it is always, this is one thing I didn't really understand. And, early on, and Alan spent quite a lot of time explaining this to me. He said, people make choices. You can't cry for the masses or try to shake them out of their slumber, because everyone has an opportunity to know the truth. They have the opportunity to know reality, but people make a choice or a series of choices not to know. Because what happens when you know, unless you are a psychopath who's decided to take the higher knowledge and game the system for your own benefit, that's a little bit like the character, I don't remember his name in the first Matrix movie, but when he decides to sell out his compatriots, he's going to be a traitor. He's sitting there having a glass of wine and a steak. And he said, I know this wine and this steak is not real, but I like it. In other words, he's saying, I like it and I have missed it. And I want back in to the system where the wine and the steak, even though it's not real, is mine to enjoy. So he's saying right there what you'll find so many people say, I prefer fiction to reality. I prefer the illusion to the truth. And Alan really drilled it in my head. You've got to leave people to their own choices, because if anything else is your ego at play, or you're the control freak, you know, oh, you've got to know this. You've got to believe this. You've got to turn your life around. You've got to do something. Well, that's what am I then? That my ego is telling me that I can actually save another person, when in reality, it's up to that person to save themselves. I can't do anything except open up my mouth and share the truth as I understand it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cypher is the name of the character, by the way.
Yeah, there you go. Big zero.
Yeah. You know, and when it gets to that, and when it comes down to that, that point where somebody asks a question, or they start to kind of take it upon themselves to want to know more, and they ask these questions, and you start to give these explanations to them, it takes time. Even that.
Oh, yeah.
Once that happens, once that icebreaker happens, it takes time. And when I say time, I'm talking months, and in some cases, years to, for lack of a better term, debrief someone, because that's what it is. It's a long series of debriefing processes to deprogram somebody and to get them out of that system, because that's what they've known their entire lives.
Yes.
And they're not going to like it when they come out of it, because as you say, once they're scared, because once you know something, you cannot unknow it. Like you can't go in there and remove that. Say, oh, okay, well, I don't like that. I'm just going to forget that. No, you can block that out to a certain extent, but there will come a time, and I think that time is coming very soon, where you're not going to be able to block it out any longer if you are currently doing that.
Well, you touch on something else that was, you know, part of that as explained to me by Alan, which is it's an unkindness. It's a harm to present this to someone who is not seriously asking and seeking, because you're presenting them with something that if they understand even a little bit of it, but they haven't asked for it, they can't unknow it. So you've actually harmed someone by opening up Pandora's box for them, when really they need to do that themselves.
Well, this hour has just absolutely flown by. They always do when you're on. Would you like to tell us about what you've got coming up on your podcast and what you're working on the website?
Oh, goodness. Yes. Tomorrow, I am going to be posting a really fun conversation that I had with Monica in Northern Ontario, Canada. And she has been a longtime listener to Alan and her whole family. It's a great story there. Husband, brother, mother. Interesting. And let's see what else. The author's series is still going. I believe this week it's going to be Orwell's 1984, but forgive me if I got that wrong. And that's a listener supplied video. And I just recorded this morning a kind of a special edition of The Real History, which I'll be releasing just when I can. I'm kind of booked up. So this will be like an extra edition, a long conversation that I had with someone that I found very interesting. So that we can be on the lookout for. And the Sunday Redux, as always, you know, possibly I made a mistake putting up such difficult audio to listen to last Sunday. So I'm going to do people the kindness of giving them something very easy to hear. Easy listening this next Sunday.
Very good. I will see you in 2 weeks. Yes.
Yes, you will. Thank you.
That is Melissa from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. I encourage all of our listeners to get over there and take a look at the treasure trove of information where she maintains the life-collected works of the late, great Alan Watt. And also her podcast is Real History with Melissa. That is available everywhere you get your podcasts. That'll do it for us for today. It's been an absolute pleasure, Melissa. I will see you in 2 weeks. Thank you for being here today. Thank you to all of the listeners. God bless everyone and have a great evening.